America.
Inside Chicago Government.
America is wunderbar. We're all living in America. America.
ShyGov.com.
Батько на бандера, Шухевич, мать. Мы за наркомана.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews about and sounds of Chicago government. I'm Dave Gloetz. In this episode, you'll hear me and my colleague, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky, discuss recent efforts by the city of Chicago to figure out where to put cops, when, and how. Our conversation is based on a couple of my recent written pieces, which appear in the Reader and at shygov.com, in which I looked into a workforce allocation project underway by the Chicago Police Department, or CPD. In our chat, Ben and I talked about Mayor Brandon Johnson's proposed 2025 budget and how it cuts, or maybe doesn't cut, police department positions tied to major reforms of CPD. I identified some little reported problems around CPD hiring, as revealed by CPD management. We also talked about bad data, namely how the police department's data is inadequate for determining on any given day where cops are and how many there are and how long it took for them to get there. I quoted city government sources that tell the story. All of that's in the standard version of the episode you're about to hear. In the premium version of the episode, which you can get by subscribing at shygov.com, you can hear all of my conversation with Ben Jarofsky, plus you can hear audio from some of the sources that I cited during our discussion. Here's the standard episode.
Remember those days when Mayor Rahm, was big sanctuary city guy waving the flag for immigrant rights? Now, it's interesting to listen to him talk as he prepares for his next chapter in his life about how we may have gone too far on that front. May have gone too far. We're maybe too liberal. We've lost touch with America. America's very concerned about the border. We're not talking about Skokie. Got that one. Okay. Without further ado, young Dave Gloetz, who doesn't live far from that Skokie border.
I have a cousin in Skokie.
He has his Don't worry, Dave Gloetz, cousin. You will not be deported. All right? It's not that border they're worried about. It's a different border.
Will they stop running the yellow line to Dempster? That's all I care about.
There's so many illegals coming through into the city.
On the yellow line.
Raylo, look into it. Who's the other one? Our good friend Nick Sposato. Look into that yellow line. It's a very serious matter. It's a border. They're crossing it.
Now I understand why the NTSB slow walked the investigation into the yellow line crash of, you know, when they ran into the snowplow on the tracks.
Wow, what a memory, by the way. They slow walked that investigation?
Yeah, the yellow line was closed for quite a while.
It was closed because the feds were investigating the crash, or was closed just because the CTA just couldn't get its act together to fix the yellow line?
These things can both be true. As far as I understand, the NTSB still has not issued its final report on that crash.
You're using an acronym and...
National Transportation Safety Board.
Thank you.
People who investigate train and plane crashes.
And for the record, Dave Gloetz laughed at my Holman Square joke and then looked up and told me in a book written by Tommy McNamee who Holman Square was named for.
He was a white guy.
Yeah, a white guy. But he was most definitely not Tom Holman.
Might be same family.
Mm-hmm. Might be. All right, Dave, we know you're not bearing gifts of clips. Maybe we'll bring that back sometime in the future. I hope so. It was truly one of my favorite segments. And that one was, ladies and gentlemen, when Dave Gloetz would collate various great moments from city council meetings. We would play aldermen talking, espousing, whatever you want. Great ideas coming from our aldermen, and then we critique them. It was always a lot of fun to do it. And young Ken Davis, I hope you're listening, is probably a little disappointed that we don't have at least one of those clips to play today. Maybe next time, Ken Davis, maybe next time. But you're here today. You wrote an excellent investigative story for my beloved Chicago Reader. So kudos to you. It's been about a month since the story broke. This story, ladies and gentlemen, it's a little complicated, so follow me on it, but it kind of gets to the heart at just the complexities of Chicago government and budgeting and sort of the fact we're in an ocean of information, Dave Gloetz, and yet it's like we don't know what's going on because we don't have the relevant information. It's kind of strange. We have so much information out there, so many numbers, so many dollar signs regarding budgets, but the specificity of it is somehow missing. This is particularly true with my not-so-beloved TIF program, but this is also true with police expenditures. And the police department is the one sacrosanct item of the budget, I believe, Dave. I'm trying to think. The only proposed cuts in the police budget that I can recall from this last budget season is cuts in the part of the budget that oversees police behavior. Am I correct on that one?
Let's call it reform.
Yeah, it's called reform.
A word that we both like to say with raised eyebrows.
Yeah, I don't like to use the word reform in regards to absolutely anything that happens in the city of Chicago or the state of or anywhere these days, particularly in government.
But it has to do with the thing called the consent decree, which is a part of a settlement that arose out of a 2019 lawsuit by the state against the city, claiming that the Chicago police use patterns and practices that violate Chicagoans' civil rights. So for the city of Chicago to settle that lawsuit, they agreed to something called the consent decree, which has been done in police departments all over the United States, which lays out hundreds, literally, you know, over 500 quote, reforms, unquote, to which the police department must comply in order to get out from underneath this lawsuit, which is being monitored by a federal judge Rebecca Palmeyer, who will be holding a hearing, by the way, this afternoon on the consent decree.
And that amount, I think, according to today's Sun-Times, was about $12.7 million out of a budget. I think it's like $16 billion. So it's a very small amount. But that's the part, that was the sliver that Mayor Brandon Johnson was proposing to eliminate, which is so bizarre because the movement, let me just take this moment to say this before we move on to your topic, the movement that propelled Johnson into the mayor's office was in part originated in a, I'm not supposed to say this anymore, but it was a defund the police movement and was an effort after the murder of George Floyd to force police officers to have a different attitude about policing in Black communities. And one of the discussion points was to take money that would otherwise be spent on police officers and spend it on mental health resources. And those days are long gone, as we are discovering here in Chicago, the most liberal of cities, where Mayor Johnson proposed to get rid of $12.7 million for money that would be for police oversight and dealing with the consent decree. And he proposed that. The lefty, so-called lefty mayor of the city of Chicago, Dave, proposed that, and he had to back off from that. And that was the only cut, as far as I could tell, that he proposed in the police budget. So we've come a long way, one way or another, in the city of Chicago. All right, talk a little bit about the article that you wrote, and I will then connect it eventually to the budget matters and to policing matters in general. But why don't you give folks sort of the abbreviated version of what you did and the points you raise.
Before I give the balcony view, as it were, I want to finish up the point we were just talking about with respect to the proposed cuts that the Johnson administration were making to police staff. The positions that the administration were proposing to cut were in various non-patrol capacities, so essentially desk jobs. And a lot of them were in what are called the Office of Constitutional Policing and Reform. And a lot of those positions are the folks who nominally, on paper, would be the ones who work with the folks who are on the plaintiff side of the consent decree and the monitoring side. There's a court-appointed federal monitor that monitors the police progress on complying with the consent decree reforms. So there are positions designated in the Chicago Police Department to work with those folks to do all the administration stuff, to report on progress in the police department and making sure that reforms are implemented in terms of creating policies that conform with the reforms, to make sure there's training, and that after all policies and training are done, that the police employees are actually using their training and their policies.
Okay.
But there's a couple quirks about the positions that were, quote, cut, unquote. One of the quirks was that in the budget itself, the proposed 2025 budget, what the city had done, what the police department had done, was actually move some of the positions around. So in other words, they took some out of the Office of Constitutional Policing and Reform, and they created new offices in the police department with names like offices of equity engagement and crime victim services. Those were functions that also were meant to help the police conform to the consent decree. But the casual observer just looked at the budget and saw, oh, they took all these positions out of the Office of Constitutional Policing and Reform. It looked like a cut.
Uh-huh.
This was explained actually by a deputy director in the police department who gave a presentation to the Community Commission of Public Safety and Accountability back in November, which was a subtlety, this point about them moving the numbers around that I had not heard reported before. So that's one thing.
So in other words, they weren't even cutting the numbers. They were just moving.
Yeah.
Wait, but, so you tell me the bright one got it wrong? They didn't propose to cut.
So that's one thing. That's one thing that I think when some people take a first glance at that one number of the Office of Constitutional Policing and Reform, they saw the number go down. But what they didn't realize that the numbers had been made up for elsewhere. That's number one. Number two, there actually were cuts.
I see.
And those cuts were, according to this deputy director in this presentation, were all unstaffed positions. Now, Ben, you know, as well as I, having been around a lot of budgets, that that is a typical budgeting tactic, trick, method, that if there aren't people currently in positions that are in the budget, well, if you just eliminate those positions in the following year's budget, you're not eliminating any people or not laying anybody off. And it's an easy way to, you know, help balance the budget. So that's a big part of what happened here for the so-called consent decree or reform-related positions. There weren't people in those positions. It's a thing that the Johnson administration reacted to, mainly because the state attorney general, Kwame Raoul, threatened to take legal action against the city of Chicago if those positions were not restored. Because nominally, those positions are responsible for advancing the reforms in the consent decree, but they're not currently staffed. It's an interesting point, because if A, we believe that those positions are important to reform, then B, when the heck are they going to put people in them?
Yeah.
I'll make one final point about this. Another thing that's not often reported is that, first of all, there are many positions in the police department that are civilian. In other words, they're not people wearing badges. And there is an effort to convert some of the badged jobs to civilian jobs, because you got people like working in human resources who are, you know, have gone through police training and wear badges. You have people in the press office who wear badges, who don't necessarily need to wear badges. And there's a narrative, there's a belief that those people should be out on the street, not behind a desk. So there's an effort at civilianization. However, the thing that's not widely reported is it takes a heck of a long time to hire a civilian for the police department. The average that I've read quoted is about 1.5 years from time of application to time of hiring. In fact, this deputy director who spoke to the community commission said, quote, "The city's hiring process is our largest impediment to our vacancies." And he was talking about civilians. So, yes, these positions were restored in the 2025 budget for that. What did you call it? $12.7 million worth of?
$12.7 million with an M.
So they were restored. But you know what? Those seats might not even be filled in 2025.
Wow.
Because of the hiring process.
Wow. That was a great read. There's a lot to back up. One, yes, Dave and I, we've been doing podcasts for years. Dave introduced me to the concept years ago. I didn't even know what a podcast was. In those days, Dave would ask me questions about the budget. It was different. I kind of like those days in a lot of ways.
Who doesn't like to talk?
And one of the things we talked about, the games, the budget show itself is a bears no relationship. Well, no, that's not true. But there's a disconnect between the reality and the spectacle of the budget, which is mostly for the enjoyment of the press, gives them something to do in the months of November and December and try to assure the great citizens of the city of Chicago that their mayor cares about them and is in charge. And the budget itself is merely a prediction or projection, if you will. So I think, oh, in June, they go, oh, my God, we got it wrong. We have to raise taxes after all. But one of the games they played, you're right, unfilled positions. This is a great one. And I remember a budget director explaining to me how it works. There's two ways it can work. So you either cut the unfilled. I'm sorry, it's such a joke. You either cut the unfilled positions and then claim, we have scrutinized the budget. Just, oh, we're up all night, all nighters. Oh, we're drinking coffee. Okay.
Cutting to the bone.
and we found all these
inefficiencies.
Inefficiencies. And then the press is like writing down inefficiencies. How do you spell that? Is that two F's?
Do you remember that Eric Zorn, a former Tribune columnist long time ago, did a summary of how many times the Chicago Public Schools claimed it had cut its central office staff?
I do not remember that, but I could see young Eric doing that, Eric E.Z. Zorn. Let's give a shout out to Eric. He now has his own newsletter that he publishes, I believe, once a week, Eric? Yes, once a week.
But that was kind of revealing. It's just it was a typical go-to, like you're talking about. It's like, we made efficiencies and cuts at the central office staff.
Yeah. And I don't even know if Chicago believes this stuff when it's Mayor Daley. And this gets into my issue of the biases that Chicagoans have toward mayors based on their race. They kind of believe this stuff when it's Mayor Daley, or they go, you got to do this. This is the game you got to play, Ben. This is how you have to play the game, okay? But when it's a Mayor Johnson or a Mayor Lightfoot or a Mayor Sawyer or a Mayor Watt, this is outrageous, Ben. I think we must get to the bottom of this. Just saying, Chicago, you got a little bias here. Anyway, the other thing they do is they keep the unfilled budgets, draw a salary for them, and use it to pay other things. That was something a budget director explained to me. In other words, I got an unfilled position for, I don't know, I'll make it up, for a police officer. You don't fill it, but that money that you are drawing could be used to pay for, I don't know, a new police car. That's how it was explained to me. So all kinds of games people play, to quote the Spinners, with a budget. I also want to point out, Dave, that this all began in terms of initiatives and consent decrees, and you put this in your article, with the murder of Laquan McDonald. You remember Rahm as the mayor at the time? And Mayor Rahm woke up and discovered that there'd been an issue of police violence in Black communities. He goes, this is a law. I didn't really realize this until now. I would say that was the fallout over him concealing the evidence of the murder, Dave, was a reason he didn't run for re-election.
The unreleased video.
The unreleased video that a Cook County judge forced him kicking and screaming and expending your tax dollars to fight people in City of Chicago. Quick report on that sometimes.
Just for listeners' clarification, it was a video showing police officer Jason Van Dyke emerging from his police car and shooting a teenager, Laquan McDonald, who was just sort of walking away while being trailed by police who were just keeping an eye on him. And that video was buried until, as you say, a judge forced the release. And that started this ball rolling, this waterfall or this roller coaster, whatever analogy you want to use, that eventually led to the U.S. Justice Department doing an investigation of the Chicago Police Department that led to the consent decree.
Yes, and let's follow the bouncing ball a little further. That led to the requirement that the police department hire people to oversee the consent decree and make sure that police officers are following rules and regulations when they deal with civilians, and they not just gun down some guy in the middle of a street and claim it was self-defense, even though it wasn't, and that mayors not bury evidence of the matter, okay? And it was the leftist mayor of the city of Chicago who proposed in that first budget to get rid of that $12.8 million. And meanwhile, Rahm, his career is resurrecting, went to Japan and to show that he could handle foreign issues as well as local issues. Let's hope he handles them a little better than he handles local issues. Is now returned and getting ready to run for governor if J.B. Pritzker doesn't run for re-election, or Senate Durbin doesn't run for re-election.
Or mayor.
You don't really think he wants to go back, do you?
He hasn't ruled it out.
Has someone asked him that? I missed that. Has someone asked him that directly?
I think Fran Spielman, when she was trying to suss him out on this, he would neither admit or deny.
You know what's funny? Oh my God, now we're on a tangent with a tangent with a tangent. We'll come back to the police study story, okay? But follow me in this, Dave. This is like our old days. We're sitting around a microphone at my dining room table as the train rode by. As a student of Rahm, okay, Rahmiology, and there's a guy out there, John McDermott, hiding, Johnny Mac Jr., sends me all kinds of, anytime Rahm's in the newspaper, I get an email from Johnny Mac Jr. Ben, did you see this? Yeah, I saw it.
You get a Rahmagram. You get a Rahmagram from John.
Big Dumpkey sends me them too from time to time. People think I'm really, I can't help myself.
You said you're a Rahmiologist.
I am a Rahmiologist. You're right. So part of my, I have a specialty in Rahmiology. Follow me on this one, ladies and gentlemen. The Rahm that expresses himself when dealing with Chicago media people and the Rahm who dresses himself with the New York Times guy. Part of it is the Chicago media day. They only ask him questions like, what are you going to run for? What are you going to run for? But like the New York Times guys, they treat him like he's a philosopher. Let's discuss the big picture. Let's talk about where the Democratic Party has to go, where we as a civilization has to go. He has these sit downs. And I'm like, dude, you are BSing it so well. You know, he's like talking about like what he experienced in Japan and how that kind of relates to where the Democratic Party is and our positions on vaccines. Let's reconsider vaccines.
Doesn't his experience now give him a certain gravitas?
Yes, that's why he did the damn thing. Why do you think gravitas, which is a word they only use in the New York Times and at Weber High School where Dave went?
So it's perfect for the New York Times to treat him that way.
Do you think the bright one has ever used the word gravitas?
With relation to Rahm Emanuel?
Gravitas. Anyway, so it's just kind of painful when you connect all the dots, Dave. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is connect the dots. And then you got Tom Homan from Trump, you know, coming into Chicago and say we have border problems, Rahm Emanuel coming back. And the leftist mayor of the city of Chicago proposed to cut $12.7 million out of an enormous budget.
Going back to this police reform issue, you asked me a couple hours ago now to talk about the big picture here in terms of the police workforce allocation.
Excellent.
When the state sued the city and started the ball rolling on this consent decree, which we're 5 years into, the intent, the thing that it was reacting to was, as I mentioned, a Department of Justice investigation that found that police were typically violating the civil rights of Chicagoans, as personified by Laquan McDonald and his murder by a police officer. Let's put that next to the idea that, are we spending money efficiently on the police department? And there are a couple of points that I can make about that. One is that it's been widely reported over the years that Chicago has more police per capita than any other major city in the United States.
Uh-huh.
And so people rightfully ask, well, why do we have so many police employees? One of the things that has spurred, as I point out in my reader piece, is that it spurred a bunch of studies over decades, taking a look at where are cops placed and why and how. But then those studies have never been widely publicized, if released at all. Aldermen, in some cases, have asked for them and not been given them. The consent decree finally forces the police department, the city of Chicago, to do a workforce allocation study that is then made public. So that led to a contract, which I anticipated in my reader piece, but had not yet been publicly acknowledged, for the city to hire a vendor to do this workforce allocation study. And as it turned out, they did finally ink the contract, which I have right here. It's many, many pages long. And it's with a vendor called Matrix Consulting Group, based out of San Mateo, California. They have to produce their results within 1 year of the effective date. And the effective date is November 1, 2024. So by this coming November, we should see a public report.
November 1, 2024
is the effective date of the contract. And Matrix has 1 year in which to release its recommendation.
2025 is when.
Correct.
I got it. Okay.
That's the current activity in terms of police workforce as it touches on the budget. Another thing I'll pluck out of the air here in terms of the budget, the city's not paying for this study. There was a consortium of philanthropic groups. We still don't know how they came together. That's something I'm trying to figure out. A group of four major, there is apparently some minor ones, but four major ones, one of them being the Joyce Foundation, which does a lot of philanthropy in Chicagoland. They came together and somebody came up with a quote of about $1 million to do the study. I'm not sure how that quote was come up with. That's another thing I'm looking into.
$1 million.
Yeah.
Got it.
This contract here finally gives the number, the actual number that they're going to pay. Roughly $760,000 is the agreed maximum amount that Matrix Consulting Group will get paid. So this doesn't come out of the city's budget, but you know there are ancillary costs like we were talking about. For example, the amount of staff needed at the police department to help the police hold up its end of the bargain. So there is that cost. We are paying every month the monitoring team and the consent decree that were hired by the court. They submit a bill to the city, so we taxpayers are paying millions of dollars to that group. And then there's language in this contract that talks about community engagement being a key component. There's six phases of the study. The contract says that in each component, some community engagement, which it doesn't detail at all, must take place. And talks about engaging the city's consultant on community engagement. And I'm like, whoa, consultant, where'd that come from? Because presumably if it's a consultant, it means that they're paid. So there are, I'm guessing, other costs that will arise out of this project, but we still don't know what they're going to be.
So let's pause to think that before we just write off this project as unnecessary, it's one of the few instances where Brian Hopkins and I agree. Brian Hopkins is the alderman of the second ward. He's quoted in Dave's reader story. He's widely known as Mr. Tiff, widely known by me, because he was the public face on that monstrosity known as the Lincoln Yards Tiff that Rahm ordered the city council to pass on his last day as he was walking out the door, wasting all kinds of property tax dollars on subsidizing the development on an already gentrifying neighborhood, talking about the insanity of the way the city runs. But Hopkins and I agree on this point, Dave, at least based on the quote that you offered up in your article, that it would be, to put it mildly, useful to know how police resources are allocated. It would be useful to know how many police officers we have per ward. That's a useful way of thinking about things. Just start with that basic notion. There's 50 wards. We should have equity of some sort. So let's see how many police officers the second ward gets, which is Brian Hopkins' ward, a relatively upscale ward that snakes in and around the loop just to the west and the north. And it would also be interested to see, I don't know, how many police officers Anthony Beale's ninth ward gets, which is a low-income ward at the far southeast side of the city of Chicago. And et cetera and so forth. Take a look at all these wards. And then we can make a judgment as to, well, the second ward doesn't have as much crime as, let's say, I don't know, the ninth ward or the 24th ward or the 27th or the 29th ward, et cetera and so forth. So maybe we should allocate more police officers to the 29th. You know, maybe that'd be the right thing to do. And then in which case, Brian Hopkins would be probably hollering and yelling, no, don't take away my police officers, hire more police officers. The point is, it would be useful to have this information. In my humble opinion, it's not just a waste of money. I would love to get your thoughts on what I just said.
Well, it's not a waste of our money, right? Because Joyce Foundation et al. Are paying for it, which raises other issues that I talk about in my reader piece in terms of transparency. So we can go down that road if you want. But just in terms of the identification, the delineation, getting actual numbers of where cops are when, it's elusive. Even the Inspector General, Deborah Witzberg, says that in the Bureau of Patrol, which is about three quarters of the police department, so these are the non-desk job, you know, officers on the street, it's very difficult to ascertain on any given day how many people are out there because the police department's data is so difficult to work with. And I'll give you a couple examples. Well, there are a couple of reasons that's true. One is because the data doesn't capture things correctly. So one of the things that the IG's office says is if a particular district of the city's 22 police districts have people on medical leave, for example, for some reason, they're still counted as being out there on the street. And according to a recent budget hearing, the mayor's proposed 2025 budget, City Council Finance Chair Pat Dowell said that there are about 900 Chicago police employees on medical leave, 900. So that's one issue, is that the data doesn't capture, you know, people who are off on medical leave or who might be on a special deployment. They're taken out of the district and sent to the Democratic National Convention or something like that. So that the data on where cops are currently is specious. Secondly, the way that data goes into the databases is challenged. One persistent problem that's been identified by the Inspector General is officers telling when they show up for a call. So when a 911 call goes out, an officer or a unit responds to the dispatcher and saying, you know, we're going to go cover this one. As soon as they arrive, they're supposed to log their arrival time. Well, sometimes they don't remember to do it, you know, and so that metric is really important to show how quickly and how efficiently police officers are responding in areas of great need. There are areas of great need, arguably, in impoverished communities and in communities that are more violent than other parts of Chicago. But the data that the police have make it difficult to tell, A, how well they're responding, and B, how well they're improving in response to these reforms.
I see.
Going back to the contract, in its initial phases of the study, Matrix Consulting Group says that it's, or the contract says it must give sort of a snapshot. It must say, here is how many police are deployed where. And one of my questions, which I'm continuing to pursue, is what are they going to do in terms of this data? Because they can't make the data better. Also sort of implied in the contract that they also might like throw in, create their own ad hoc data collection systems temporarily, which would be really interesting to see. So that's a big issue, the data.
Wow, that was a great riff. And let me just make a couple observations. Number one, several millennials have told me this many times when they make fun of my problems, inadequacies when it comes to using computers effectively as tools. You can find pretty much anything you need, Ben. Computer will tell you that. And it's not hard. It's not complicated. You just order the computer to do that. So the city of Chicago could, if it wanted to, Dave, go through the information and find out how many police officers are on leave for medical reasons, how many police officers are on leave for any reasons, which means how many police officers are out there right now and where they're being sent. What are they doing? How many police officers work behind a desk? How many police officers deal with the press? How many police officers are investigating murders and crimes? They could do that. The fact that they don't do that, as your article suggests, is because they don't want to do that. And it's in their best interest to keep the public ignorant. And I appreciate the fact that in this one particular instance, I have a few allies in Brian Hopkins and Maria Haddon, another alder person, you quote in your story, asking for more information. Well, not Maria, but Brian was completely worthless in the pursuit of how TIF dollars. It's an interesting contrast. If we could do the same thing for TIF dollars, if we wanted to, we could take a look at where every ward where the TIF dollars are allocated, in which case we would find that the second ward where Brian Hopkins is his ward gets more than in the city because of that Lincoln Yard debacle. All right. We could do all these things. We could have computers. We could order computers to have a useful function, Dave, and tell inquiring people like yourself how police officers are allocated or how our property tax dollars, TIFs, property taxes, are allocated. But we choose not to.
This is institutional resistance, which is an entirely other issue that has been one of the things that I've been wanting to dig into for a long time. You know, what the kind of reporting I'm doing now is just basically looking at contracts, numbers, facts on the ground. But this long institutional resistance to things like reducing police misconduct settlements, reducing the level of police misconduct in general. There are some really basic institutional, sometimes I call it clots of clout, that persist from administration to administration that I would really love to be able to chronicle and follow the lineage of, if you will.
Lots of clout. Did you come up with that?
Yeah.
That's really good. Explain what you mean by C-L-O-T-S of clout.
Well, I'll give an example. Do you remember the Shachman decree, right?
Yes.
Thumbnail sketch. Michael Shachman was an attorney who brought a lawsuit against not only the city of Chicago, but the county of Cook and other large government entities, saying essentially that they use patronage, that they make hiring decisions based not on people's qualifications, but on who's connected, who knows somebody, who's clouted. That also went through a consent decree process for decades. I think it was almost 30 years that the city of Chicago got out from underneath the consent decree and had to prove to a court that its hiring was now done very objectively, not like you get a streets and sand job because somebody knew somebody sent you. It's based purely on your qualifications. Well, the federal monitor, Noel Brennan, in that consent decree made regular reports on the progress And she said at one point, and I interviewed her, she said at one point, while the city has cleaned up its hiring process, there persist many, many managers in the city of Chicago, higher ups, who are responsible for these abuses, who she's pretty much identified, but she couldn't publicly out, and whom the city has not either disciplined or just fired, as she thought maybe they should be, because they are the people through whom these abuses persisted, and they're still there. And these people epitomize to me the clots of clout that still exist in the city of Chicago and, you know, other governmental entities, the 7,000 governmental entities in the state of Illinois. Why do we have 7,000 governmental entities, you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt. This is a tangent, another tangent. There's no doubt that there's persistent waste in government. One of the few valuable things out of the budget spectacle is that we get momentary glimpses of some of the waste when aldermen argue, when they're trying to make a larger point about how we don't need the property tax as much property taxes, they'll showcase, Dave, instances or examples of waste. So, like, I forget the mayor's press office, how many people are, I forget actually the mayor's office, it went up, which is so bizarre and twisted and weird, because this mayor's administration may be the absolute worst at communicating whatever message it wants. So I would like to think it went down to sort of justify the lousy job they do at communicating whatever they want to communicate. But apparently it's gone up.
So, you know, new clout can arise. That's what that says. Yeah.
Wow. That's so, what a waste. Just a waste of money. It should be spent in the classroom.
This is a good point for me to plug another piece of mine, which is called The City That Doesn't Work 2025 Calendar. It's a pictorial calendar for each month. It shows a different photo of city workers, quote, on the job, unquote, who are not working. The inspiration for this calendar was captured for me by a quote from the former Inspector General of Chicago, Joe Ferguson, back in September. And he said, quote, the water department, for example, operates under 17 different collective bargaining agreements. It routinely involves staffing modest-sized street projects with a whole array of people who have to take turns doing their job, with everybody else sort of standing around a hole or standing by, waiting for their turn, unquote. I just want to make clear that I'm not dissing unions here, but the clots of clout have resulted in, I think, not only the union workforce, but people in management to take advantage of political considerations and lack of transparency to create a whole bunch of staff and jobs that are not needed.
I feel as though the last time that Chicago took more or less honest approach to this, and I always have honest, the word honest in quotes, was during the days of Harold Washington, when you had two competing factions fighting for attention, the Harold Washington faction, which is controlled by Harold Washington, a relatively diverse group of Black, whites, and Hispanics, and then the Eddie Vitoliak, Ed Burke, let's not let him off the hook, faction, which was a bunch of white guys. Each side was trying to claim that the other side was wasting dollars with their patronage. And so we, back in those days, Dave, which was like a long, long time ago, we had sort of a glimpse of it. But yeah, you're right. This patronage exists. I could point out that it's probably the best investment dollar for dollar the city makes by hiring a city worker, compelling that worker to live in Chicago, pay taxes to Chicago, more likely buy his or her food in Chicago because it's more convenient. I could make that argument, and I would make that argument in normal circumstances. So I don't know if I'm going to join Joe Ferguson's crusade to get rid of city workers.
But how about this, Ben? How about redeploying city workers so they can do things like shovel snow on sidewalks instead of standing around a hole?
All right. If you and me and Joe Ferguson running city government, that'd be beautiful.
The day might come.
Get it done, okay? So just, folks, where we started, this is a study. Okay, that the city of Chicago was dragged kicking and screaming to finally implement, hasn't been implemented yet. We should get the results in a year, telling us what they could tell us right now. They don't have to do a study. They could tell us literally right now how they're allocating police officers. They choose not to. Instead, they were dragged kicking and screaming to allocate, or no, they didn't even allocate it. They got
free money.
Free money. They made a phone call to Joyce. Hey, can you allocate a little money to this thing? Dave Glantz is driving us nuts. He's the only guy in Chicago who's paying attention to this. I would say this falls under the category of giving Chicago the middle finger. And this, we see this all the time. So it's something they could do right now, Dave Clawatz. They could do this right now. Instead, they could hire you to do it. All right. Anybody who knows anything about computers could give them this information. But no, they're going to make us wait until November of 2025. Am I being unfair to the city of Chicago, Dave Clawatz?
No. And I'll give you another reason why. Something else that has not been widely reported is that the city this year put out a request for proposals to revamp the police data system. So it's called a law enforcement record system. The contract, as far as I can tell, hasn't even yet been awarded. So that is something that they're going to spend money on. I'm not sure where in the budget it shows up, because a lot of the police budget, much of the police budget, I've reported on this in the past, doesn't show up in the police budget. So, for example, when they fix the cars, that doesn't come out of the police budget. That comes out of a department called the Department of Fleet and Facilities Management. It's kind of like the U.S. military, right? Some of the U.S. military expenses come out of the Department of Energy, for example. There are folks who have tried to figure out, in fact, you can look at my website, Inside Chicago Government, shygov.com, and you can see my interviews with a former budget person who was with the Council Office of Financial Analysis, who did his own assessment of how much really the city is spending on police. So anyway, going back to my original point, there is this as yet unawarded contract to revamp police data. So that's going to cost something. I don't remember what the dollar, well, they're waiting for proposals, so they'll presumably pick the cheapest bid. One more thing about that is that the vendor doing the workforce allocation study, they're supposed to accommodate whatever police data systems exist. Well, the police data systems are currently undergoing transformation because the city had not yet named a vendor to do this. An analogy might be one person is writing the user manual, the operating manual for an airplane, while another person is designing the airplane. It's not exactly like building the airplane while flying it, but it's, you know, a similar.
Is this revamping of police data system going to cost?
Well, it's an open request for proposals. So the proposals will come in and the vendors will give quotes and then we'll know once it's awarded.
So this, ladies and gentlemen, little budget tidbit here. We don't know how much it could cost. Okay. So I don't know how you could budget for it. If you don't know how much it's going to cost.
They must have budgeted for it, right? Because they just didn't one day say, you know what? Let's do an RFP for data.
Well, there must be a range, but they haven't supplied that range, which just goes to show you what I began about the budget spectacle that we're now watching in the city of Chicago, which I think is actually designed to get people not interested in city government. If that's a whole other conversation, the brainwashing of Chicago.
The complexity is a turnoff.
Yeah, it's just, you know, a lot of noise. I can't pay. I don't know. I'm going to concentrate on the Bears.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. Which is a more hopeless cause, the Chicago Bears or the city of Chicago? Let's debate.
Have that debate.
That will have that. Cam Buckner's probably the only guy in the city who could handle that one. He knows both.
God bless him.
So the budget, like I said, is a projection. And so one of the expenses they're projecting is the cost of a study. Is it a study or an actual revamping? It's an actual revamp.
Yeah, to actually do the project.
So they're going to do a project that's going to change how they collect data.
And store the data.
And store it, even though I'm convinced, and this is so funny that me of all people would be convinced of this, but I am convinced they could do it right now without revamping. Do it right now.
Maybe you can get a consulting gig.
Yeah. Hey, where's Danny Solis when I need him to like put the good word in for me?
Yeah, you're good with Jason. Oh, that doesn't help anymore. Never mind.
Jason Lee. Oh, my God. Jason. I haven't talked to Jason Lee in forever. Jason Lee is one of the Mayor Johnson's top aides. So anything you want to mention, Dave, that you haven't mentioned about your story that ran in the Reader, I urge everybody to read it. There's far more details and sort of subtle jabs that Dave kind of, every now and then, like a little subtle, like, okay. I see what you're doing there. Anything else you want to mention?
This is an evolving story. I just put a piece out at shygov.com about the contract itself, what's in the contract, what many questions the contract posed that I'm pursuing. So I'll continue doing a reporting on this. Go to shygov.com. Inside Chicago Government to see my continuing reporting on this. You can also go there to find the aforementioned 2025 calendar, The City That Doesn't Work. You can find that under the blog menu under Chicago.
The reason I find these subjects so fascinating, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope the rest of you out there share it, is because it exposes the difference between the reality of Chicago and the spectacle of Chicago. So what we're watching right now unfold with this budget process is a show in which you, the residents of the city of Chicago, are like the audience, and you're watching it, and the aldermen are throwing out little chunks of meat at you, which you gobble up to give you the notion that they're operating on your behalf. The mayor of the city of Chicago, who has, in my opinion, the worst communications operation that I've seen in all my years of watching mayors.
That's saying a lot.
And that is saying a lot. Yeah. And when I say worse, like Mayor Rahms was arguably worse in that it was just pure propaganda, effective pure propaganda.
At least they were not incompetent.
Yeah, they were not incompetent. They were effective. So you could argue, well, effective propaganda is worse than ineffective propaganda. And I'm like, well, that's a valid point, which we could dedicate a whole show to.
But perhaps incompetent is the word you want.
That is correct. This is a guy, he's already used the word specious, and now he's explaining.
I keep the thesaurus right here next to me.
His SATs were way higher than mine, ladies and gentlemen. He's a proud graduate of Weber High School, former Weber High School. So this is why I say it's important to do stuff like this, because it just gives you a sense of what's really going on here. And this notion, we'll just leave with this, and I got to thank Dave Glowatz for bringing this out. This notion that the city of Chicago needs a study to show us how police are allocated is one of the... is so funny, man. It's like out of Catch 22. You can tell us that right now.
That's all we've got for the standard episode. If you'd like to hear the full-length premium version of the episode, including material not heard elsewhere, please subscribe at shygov.com. Or if you're already a subscriber, log in at shygov.com, go to the Chicago menu, and choose public safety. As always, listeners, we welcome your comments, your questions, and suggestions for future interviews. Using email, you can get those to us via comment@shygov.com. Using Facebook, go to facebook.com/insidegov. It's inside gov. And on Twitter or X, find us at CHIGOVT. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.